You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And we're back, third and final hour now, joined by Keith Alexander the Great, who has been out of the studio this evening, but he is back with us to cover a wide variety of news stories, and I mean really this time, a wide variety of news stories. We're going to do some quick hits on. They tend to pile up, and we're working through so many guests. So when we do our March Around the World series, we only have that month of March that's exclusively dedicated to these international heavyweights, and you only got 4 weeks. There's only four Saturdays in March this year. Sometimes there could be five Saturdays, depending on how the calendar falls. But this month, there's only four. So we're cramming them in as quickly and as fast as we can. We had three tonight. Philip DeWinter, Anke van der Meersch from Belgium, and then, of course, Dan Erickson, who you just heard from in the second hour, from Sweden. Keith, I know you're big fans of all those people, and we spent some time with Philip and Anke in person, and great people all. And it's this has definitely been one of the episodes on March Around the World the last few years. It's really, really, really shining.
Well, I have a picture framed on the wall of Philip, you, Anna, and me when they came to town the last time over on Gay Olson Avenue in Memphis in front of, Tap and Tamp. I think it's a fancy coffee bar. But anyway, we had a great time with them. We met them up at the American Renaissance Conference that year, and they came through Memphis to see some. And I remember them saying they were surprised at how small a place Memphis was. Well, that's because you had to get back, and we just basically went through downtown. So I'm making the offer to them. If they're ever back, get in touch, and I'll take you on the full Cook's tour of Memphis and Shelby County, and you'll find out this anything but small.
Now, if you lived in Antwerp, it might be rough. There ain't no might to it. If you lived in Antwerp, would you want to come back to Memphis unless you had to?
I don't know. As long as they weren't having a war in Antwerp, you know, we forget how lucky we are as Americans being off the beaten path in the Western Hemisphere. That's why.
Yeah, Mark Weber mentioned that in one of his, I think his most recent appearance a few weeks ago, saying we Americans view war totally differently because it's never been visited upon us here, at least not since.
Unless you're a Southerner. Now, we had total war visited on us before the Germans or the Russians or anyone else did back in the day.
I said that. I said except for Lincoln. But, yeah, you're right. And then the Indian Wars. But not like they have experienced it, and certainly not in the last 150-plus years. But anyway, Keith, I got to tell you, this has been a great series. And I think the making of a great series, what marks it as a great series, or at least as, in my opinion as a host, is – did the interviews leave me wanting more? Was there still stuff left on the table? And I think with just about every one of the guests we've had this month, the answer is yes. I mean, with Tom Sunak, I wanted to talk with him more about his work as a diplomat for the Croatian government. And we've never really talked to him about that. With our guest in Brazil last year, I wanted to ask him, are whites hated as much in South America as we are in our own native countries? And with Philip, I didn't have time to ask Philip. But, you know, when Philip came over, he visited with us. He also visited with Pat Buchanan on one of his trips to the United States. And, of course, Pat retired recently, as you and I discussed late last year, and I was going to ask him a little bit more about that visit with Pat. And anyway, you can't get to it all. So there's a lot to cover, and it's been moving very fast. It's one more week to go in March Around the World, and then it's going to transition into Confederate History Month. But where will we go next week? Where will we end the march? We began it in England with Nick Griffin. Where are we going to end it? Well, we'll find out next week. But first, Keith,
we'll have to get a representative from the North Pole and the South Pole this time.
We've covered this. I tell you what, we have covered a lot of ground, a lot of territory, a lot of different nations this month, and still, again, one stop to go. And we'll see where we end up next week. I know. We'll let you know next week. But Keith, I know you have been closely watching the failure of the Silicon Valley Bank and everything in play there. That's a big topic, so why don't you take a stab at it?
Well, in a nutshell, it's a perfect example of the saying that is making the rounds now, go woke and go broke. Silicon Valley Bank was probably the most woke banking institution in the nation. They gave $74 million to Black Lives Matter and about 2.6, I believe, to these LBGT, QRSTUVs, you know, right groups and whatnot, parity groups. And they were not taking care of business. And they were caught short. They didn't. They had a diversity, inclusion, and equity manager, but they didn't have a risk assessment manager. And they got overextended. They had too many treasury bonds in their portfolio, which is good in normal times, but bad when you are in inflationary times. And apparently, they were so caught up in their do-gooderism that they couldn't do well by their own depositors. But again, look what Joe Biden has done. He stepped in and said, we're not just going to protect the depositors to the limits of the FDIC. We're going to protect all of them. Well, guess who the first group of people were that got money out about a week before this? And it was all of these depositors, Jewish depositors from the state of Israel and later from the United States. See, they look after their own, the left does, and most of the depositors in San Francisco and in Silicon Valley, I'm sure, are leftists, and that's why Joe Biden decided he was going to do them a favor and bail out every one of them. But the silence is deafening when it comes to the people of Palestine, Ohio, who are white and conservative and not supporters of Joe Biden. So politics are still being played to the hilt by the Biden administration. And, you know, Silicon Valley Bank is, you know, probably a harbinger of things to come, because this woke madness has become an epidemic in American business. And when you're getting into rough times, which is what inflation is, rough times financially, you're going to find more and more companies that cannot weather the storm after having made improvident investments in woke enterprises. That's one of the things that they did at the Silicon Valley Bank. They financed a bunch of tech startups for minorities, and they don't even worry. The minorities don't worry about the consequences. In fact, there's a book that is popular among the left now called Failing Up, written by a black man. It said, don't fear, you know, having a harebrained scheme and getting it financed and then having it crater. That won't be used against you. In fact, that will work to your benefit, because now you can say, I have experience in the business world. Not good experience, but experience. So therefore, they would qualify for even more largesse from the left and from the government.
All right. You mentioned Biden, the avatar, who I wonder if he knows he is playing the role of president. I mean, he is only just the president. He's certainly not calling the shots. So we've got something that Biden said this week that deserves a response from Alexander the Great. And we'll get to it right after this. Stay tuned, everybody.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by six corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject from the Spanish Civil War to the funding behind the transgender movement. Antelope Hill publishes books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo and brings real culture to the reading public at an affordable price. If you count yourself as a political dissident, you owe it to yourself to check out the Antelope Hill catalog with exclusive offerings like Solzhenitsyn and the Right, the Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more. There's something there for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out the catalog today at AntelopeHillPublishing.com. That's AntelopeHillPublishing.com. I'm James Edwards, and I want you to go to AntelopeHillPublishing.com. Welcome back, everybody. Third hour is yours truly, James Edwards and Keith Alexander, covering a variety of news. He just touched on the failure of these banks. And it wasn't just the Silicon Valley Bank, Keith. There was another one in Signature Bank in New York that flopped. And we'll see.
And they're the Shylocks, they have the same business model.
The Shylocks never take a hit. That's the thing. And but anyway, let's talk about this for a moment. We found
and
this
one other
over
thing that whoever another group that never takes a hit are the minorities, the blacks, the gays, etc., that are being financed on harebrained schemes by these banks. And Signature Bank was just as woke as the Silicon Valley Bank.
Let's talk about another one of those protected classes, and this class barely exists, but you wouldn't know it by the amount of attention it gets, but it's the so-called transgendered people. They used to just call them transvestites, but Joe Biden came out and gave an interview this week saying that it is, and I quote, a sin and cruel to oppose what he called gender-affirming surgeries, but basically what he's arguing is that it is a sin and cruel to oppose the mutilating of the genitals of children. Now, Brad Griffin wrote this, and it's spot on. As absurd as it sounds to our ears, theological arguments will eventually be created to accommodate this. Love is love or some such nonsense. And as they did with the situation involving interracial marriages, the churches will adapt. They will then deny that there was ever a time that they were opposed to children trying out new genders and cutting off their sex organs. If you were born in the 1920s and you lived through the 1980s, you witnessed the invention of racism, so-called racism, quote-unquote racism, and watched it become a sin. And the whole culture twists itself into a pretzel to accommodate this new dogma. You also watched your descendants forget about all of this. And so here's how it works, Keith. Brad lays it out. Leftists begin pushing fringe issues like anti-racism or transgenderism. It's picked up by liberal academics and is then pushed into the universities, where it eventually hits a critical mass amongst liberals and leftists. And then it is pushed down the culture, into the culture by the media, which pushes it down the throat of executive action. It eventually becomes law. Conservatives put up a token resistance and then eventually cave and adopt it as their own position. The culture adapts to a new political and legal landscape, and it becomes a sin to oppose it. But this thing with the transgenderism, you know, the Bible actually addresses this issue. Did you know that? Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 20. A woman shall not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on a woman's cloak, for whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. So the Bible's clear on this. You have these churches trying to accommodate it now. But this whole thing where these children are forever mutilating their bodies and forever taking away their ability to have a family one day. And if we had an honest and free media, I would love to know what percentage of people who go through this some years later live to regret it and commit suicide over it even. I mean, there have been documented cases of this. And I think that this all falls at the feet of our institutions, certainly the academia, the government, et cetera, for glamorizing this and popularizing this as if this is some sort of a healthy alternative lifestyle, Keith.
Well, what this comes from is Jewish domination of the media. When you control the media, you know, Marshall McLuhan's famous book in the late 60s, The Medium is the Message. If you control the media, you control them. If you control the media, you control the message. Well, what has been bad and considered bad, not only by Christianity, but every major religion in the world, homosexuality, transgenderism, genital mutilation, cross-dressing, all of these things are now, they've now discovered some Dead Sea Scrolls or something, I guess, and now we find out that God really wasn't opposed to those things after all, and of course, it's a load of rubbish. What they're doing is they are trying to create, what they're doing with transgendered surgery, they're trying to create a whole new bevy of potential sexual partners for these perverts, getting these children to change their sex early on so the transvestites will find more sexual partners. It is sick. It is bad. It is anti-biblical. And, you know, the left has a long history since the Civil Rights Movement of trying to make liberalism equate with righteousness. They did that at Selma. They did that in the Civil Rights Movement, in the marches. You had, remember Paul Simon talking about the radical preachers come to get me released, see us all on the cover of Newsweek? That's what has happened. Now, I understand in Germany right now, the German bishops, Roman Catholic bishops, have jointly denounced Pope Francis because they say that he is too stodgy, he is not embracing transgendered rights and things like this and homosexuality. Well, I would love to see Pope Francis give all of these guys their pink slip. Tell them, you've been sacked. You're through. You know, if you want to stay in the priesthood, we'll have you scrubbing out the toilets at the, you know, homeless mission in your vicinity. But other than that, you know, you're not going to be in charge of a diocese or a church or a group of believing people when you have chosen to make yourself an apostate priest. That's what they're doing. And see, this is, we've been fighting this war forever. And you go into the normal mainline Protestant church, the normal Roman Catholic church, even the normal fundamentalist Christian church in your vicinity, and you will find this phenomenon I call the replacing the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John with the Gospels of Peter, Paul, and Mary. Liberalism is nice. Nice equates to goodness. That's all really that the Bible requires, that you be nice and good. As they, and of course, it's apparently nice and good to take children away from their parents and subject them to sexual reassignment surgery.
Well, and you, nice and good by surrendering to every whim they have, and it's never enough to satiate their lust, and never enough to calm them or placate them. They are chronic malcontents, and this is something that's been brought up. The most powerful word in the English language is something that white men are going to have to learn to say, and the answer is, and the word is no. The word is no. And this new thing here, I mean, everything. I was talking about this with Anka earlier. Everything about these people, their art, their architecture, their mythology in this case that I'm about to bring to your attention is ugly. They have torn down in Newark, New Jersey, a monument to Christopher Columbus, of course, a man who actually accomplished something, a man who actually accomplished something real.
Who affected the course explorers. Of human history.
Exactly. Affected the course of human history and was one of the greatest explorers in the history of the world. They have torn that down and put up this monument to Harriet Tubman, and I tell you, Keith, this thing is so hideous and repulsive, just like the Martin Luther King weird sexual monument that was just unveiled in Boston a few weeks ago. But this thing is so ugly. The sub-Saharan features of this monument are so exaggerated that if you and I had chiseled this, if you and I had sculpted this, we'd been arrested for a hate crime for making her look so disgusting. And it was, one of the comments was, what is this? Is this some sort of a playground, or are children supposed to crawl around in the nostrils? I mean, it is that bad and that hideous, like everything the left creates is. But this whole thing with Tubman, this Tubman propaganda, most of it's really just mythology. So much of it just never happened, but it doesn't stop them from worshiping this. And this is the thing. Vidair tweeted this out. What will happen to our civilization, past, present, and future, if we refuse to come back from this wokeness affecting our ability not only to see clearly, but to say collectively, again, that most powerful word in the English language. The word is no, no. These are not our heroes. And this story isn't even true, for God's sake.
Well, let me tell you what is happening. We've got to save those statues, put them in a safe place until we gain ascendancy again in the culture, because this too shall pass. You know, you can't go wrong. God is not going to allow the devil's world to be enshrined. He will come back with judgment at some point. Harriet Tubman is appropriately named because her behind is the size of a number 10 washtub. And she is supposed to be some great heroine of the left. You know how many people that she brought up out of slavery into the free states? That she was supposed to be a conductor on the Underground Railroad. Well, I listened to a program called The Erased History of MLK by John Doyle. He said 70. For 70, getting 70 slaves and over a period of years and helping them get to the North, she now outshines Christopher Columbus, George Washington, Robert E. Lee, people that actually made a big difference in the course of human events. And Harriet Tubman is, you know, that Sojourner Truth, like you said, these are basically society's chronic malcontents, people that
were always scowling. I mean, even in the monuments, she looks repulsive because it's just a scowl. It's just a pained, anguished existence.
Well, that's because she encountered a mirror, okay, and she found out what she really looked like.
All right. Got to take a break. The music's playing. We'll come back to this. I want to talk a little bit more about this.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Richard Johnson. Send more drones to the Black Sea and bring U.S. fighter jets along. That's the message from Florida Senator Marco Rubio. He says Russia's intercept of a U.S. drone on Monday over the Black Sea is a direct test to see how President Biden responds. NBC correspondent Courtney Cuby says Russian jets harassing U.S. forces is a new level of confrontation.
This kind of activity that we're seeing here, especially with the dropping of the fuel, that is extremely uncommon, if not unprecedented, even with some of the more potentially dangerous confrontations in the air that we've seen between the U.S. and the Russians and other militaries and the Russians.
Cuby says her sources say the harassment of the U.S. craft was approved at the highest levels of the Russian government. More evidence of a tight labor market. The Labor Department says about 20,000 fewer of us filed for unemployment insurance last week compared to the week before. Supply chain issues are still a thing. General Motors says it's shutting down the Bowling Green, Kentucky plant that makes Chevy Corvettes because of a lack of some parts. But a GM plant in Mexico that makes trucks is due to reopen on Monday after a two-week supply-related closing. We should feel very good about the banking system in the USA because the government stepped in and closed two banks last week. That's what Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told a Senate committee.
This week, the government took decisive and forceful actions to stabilize and strengthen public confidence in our financial system.
Yellen reminded senators the money used to guarantee deposits comes from the FDIC, not the taxpayers. The rain is over for the moment in California, but the danger remains. Part of a hillside in San Clemente collapsed, leaving four buildings at the top of the hill uninhabitable. And more to come. Forecasters say another atmospheric river will hit the Golden State early next week. This is USA News.
Non-attorney spokesperson, ad sponsored by Open Jar Concepts. Attention veterans and active duty military. If you were issued earplugs between 2002 and 2016 and were diagnosed with hearing loss or ringing in the ears, you may be entitled to compensation. The manufacturer of these military earplugs recently paid $9.1 million to resolve claims that their earplugs were defective, potentially exposing service members to damaging sound levels that could have resulted in hearing loss or tinnitus. If you or a loved one were issued earplugs and were diagnosed with tinnitus or hearing loss, don't wait. You fought for this country. And our attorneys want to fight for you. Call 800-958-2145 now for a free legal consultation and to see if you may be eligible to file a claim. Time restrictions may apply, and you pay nothing unless there's a recovery in your favor.
so call 800-958-2145 now. Again, 800-958-2145. That's 800-958-2145.
So we were talking in the last segment about a true work of art, these beautiful monuments to the real heroes of America, like Christopher Columbus, like Nathan Bedford Forrest. That was probably, if people didn't see it, it wasn't as famous as some of these other pieces. It was here in Memphis, but this equestrian monument of Nathan Bedford Forrest is, for my money, the finest equestrian monument I've ever seen for anyone at any time period. And these true works of art, these sculptures, these statues, these monuments are not only being taken down, but replaced by not just our heroes, but truly, it being, objectively speaking here, hideous-looking works of so-called art. And you see it with the King statue in Boston, this thing with Harriet Tubman in Newark. But chronic malcontentism, Keith, certainly is a tie that binds in that particular community. Colin Kaepernick is back in the news, alleging that his white adoptive parents gave him a problematic upbringing. They perpetuated racism. Now, all of this stems from that when he was... Now, this white family in middle America who had white children of their own, they brought in Colin Kaepernick, they raised him, they provided for him, they gave him a good middle-class life, they gave him the environment needed to succeed and move forward as a professional athlete. Does he thank them for that? Just like the situation with the Tuies in Memphis, they are held in contempt by their adoptive black son. Colin Kaepernick back in the news now. What is he upset about? Is he upset that he didn't get to have an absentee black father? And his, you know, most blacks that come from those types of upbringings where the father's not on the scene, which is very normal in that community, they at least have a mother. He didn't even have that. But does he take it out on his biological parents? No, but no, he takes it out on the family that took him in and gave him a good middle class upbringing. And not only did he do that, Keith, and did it make national news, he was lauded for this. He was praised for this. This is what Pedro Gonzalez, the political commentator, wrote in response to this. It is impossible, he writes, to have a functioning society where this level of ingratitude and outright racial hatred is not only tolerated, but celebrated. And that's what you've got, following on in the footsteps of, I'm sure, his heroes, people like Martin Luther King and Harriet Tubman.
Continue to bleat about how badly they were treated by the kindly white people that adopted them, because hopefully that will put an end to this misbegotten mission of some, you know, do-gooder types to go against nature and adopt black children, white people adopting black children. If you want to be held in contempt and held up for ridicule for the rest of your life, just do that. It's not going, see, being a neurotic jerk like Colin Kaepernick and like these other people that turn on the white people that have, you know, did everything they could to give them every advantage in life, that just shows you what our society has come to reward now. We reward dysfunction. We reward bad behavior. We reward boorishness and mean-spiritedness and everything that is the opposite of that. We, our society and our culture is in an open war against kindliness, you know, goodness, reaching out to people. White people need to understand that not only are you not getting any brownie points for this, you are making yourself a target. If you read the Daily Ken, there are white couples that have been killed by their adopted black children, their, you know, children that they have tried to mentor or help. This is not the answer to anything. Basically, white people, like Scott Adams, the author of the Dilbert comic book, said, you need to get as far away from those black people as possible. They are like Lady Carolyn Lamb said about her boyfriend, Lord Byron, in the early 19th century. She said he was mad, bad, and dangerous to know. That describes Colin Kaepernick and all these other people like him that have turned on basically the best thing that happened to them in their life. They lived a childhood of comfort because of these people. They were mentored. They were sent to good schools. You know, their life was smooth because of these people. But now they apparently feel like they have more of a bond to their black parents, biological parents, who cast them aside, washed their hands of them, than the people that stepped into the breach and tried to help them. So, you know, what's Leo DeRocher, the baseball manager back in the 1940s and 50s, said it best, nice guys finish last. And our people need to understand that. Use your talents, use your beneficence to help other white people. That's what blacks do. I don't hear about blacks reaching across the racial divide to help white people. I don't hear about Asians doing that for whites. I don't hear about Hispanics doing that for whites. Everybody except us has a healthy sense of racial identity. And when you do this, you're not helping anything. You're basically enabling somebody like Colin Kaepernick to get just enough education to be dangerous to society and to himself, and most importantly, other blacks.
Keith, I got one more thing for you here that we'll shoehorn in before the next and final break of the night. Bill Walton, former NBA champion, former MVP, Bill Walton has found himself into hot water for using a deplorable and inexcusable term on a recent basketball broadcast. You're probably thinking it begins with an N, right? Well, no, it doesn't. Although he got the same treatment. He used the word midget in a ESPN broadcast, and I would have never known this. It seems like every people group, every group of any kind, whether it's a sexual perversion or disability or whatever, they've all got their advocacy groups except for normal, able-bodied, white heterosexuals. So he used the word midget. And then I'm reading this article. You're going to think this is a parody. I'm reading directly from this article now. The Little People of America, a nonprofit organization that provides support and information to people of short stature and their families, caught wind of Walton's language and was not happy with what it heard. And here was their statement and their response. They're kind of getting on board. They figured out how to do it here. Those who use the term midget or any terminology that further stigmatize people born with dwarfism are asked to educate themselves and to eradicate this word that is deplorable and inexcusable. Little People of America is asking Bill Walton to issue an apology and vow to use appropriate terminology rooted in respect and dignity for our people going forward. Keith, for some reason, that just rubbed me the wrong way. I mean, I'm just, why does it rub me the wrong way? I don't even know if I can actually put my finger on it.
Well, I wonder myself why it took them this long to get around to short people, because, you know, if you have an immutable physical characteristic, like you have black skin, Negro features, or Hispanic features, or whatever, you know, they became protected. But I'm sure you could dig up the same type of statistical evidence that, you know, you get a guy that's 5'2" against a guy that's 6'2", and they have the same resume, the same grades and whatnot. Which one got the better job? Which one got the best career? You're probably going to find out that the taller guy did. But, you know, I guess that Bill Walton, it's like poetic justice that he is having to be called on the rug about this, because nobody tried to kiss black ass more assiduously than Bill Walton in his career. He acted like he was just in love with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and people. Any black athlete, he was all for. But, you know, now let's see how they handle this one. They're going to have to get the Silicon Valley Bank revved up again so they can give money. We can start having basketball camps, and then we're going to be waiting for a 5'4" NBA center to come out of this project. You know, this is what they're going to try to do. And see, trying to make these black people into CEOs and whatnot is about like trying to make a 5'4" person into an NBA center. This is it's all hogwash. And you can be fair and you can be nice, but when you insist upon equal results,
that's the thing. I mean, it went from equality, equal opportunity to equity, which is equal results. And I'm sure have existed situations where you're in this situation for a scholarship or a job position where the black candidate might be better suited, better qualified, more appropriate than the white. But I am certain that those are oftentimes rare and the exception to the rule.
I want to see this really take off. I want to see them displacing black guys in the NBA with 5'4" white guys. That would be really that would be delicious irony.
All right, we got to take a break. We're going to give you good news when we come back. Good news out of Florida. One more segment. Another show will be in the books. Stay tuned, everybody.
In message one, we said that Satan, the father of lies, John 8:44, gave the left evil, spiritual power the more they use the lies. The political left today is the beast. Now the Bible confirms that the dragon gave him, the beast, his power, Revelation 13:2. The extra evil spiritual power that comes from the beast by their lying is what accounts for the string of the leftist criminals in the government that have never yet been prosecuted. It also explains why American capitalists support communism in the 21st century. Note 1. That behavior of capitalists was predicted by Vladimir Lenin, a cell of the beast. Note 2. Henry Ford was a capitalist, and he would have never gone communist. The difference between Ford and the present-day end-time capitalists is that Ford was born and educated in the Kingdom of Christ, 19th century America, the New Jerusalem, Revelation 21.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Traveler's Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been so busy during this, our annual march around the world, that I have been remiss in my need to remind you that we are now halfway through TPC's first quarter fundraising drive. I think back in December when we were having all of that fun around Christmas time with our Christmas fundraising drive and the great incentive gifts we were offering then, we mentioned it about every hour. We were so excited about it, and it is so needed. It is no less needed now. If we needed to do it more often, we would. Thankfully, doing it quarterly keeps the wheels on the wagon here, but we haven't really made a lot of mention about this month because, again, we've been trying to get as many great guests on this program for you as possible from as many different nations as possible, and so we've been busy. But I do want to remind you that we are now halfway past the deadline here, or halfway to the deadline, halfway through it. We've still got a couple of weeks to go, but it's rounding the bend and turning the corner. Please support the work of this broadcast so we can continue having shows like this and guests like the ones you've been hearing all month and that you hear around the year on this program. $100 or more, you're going to get a DVD movie, 75 minutes long. It's a speech that I gave that I think you'll enjoy if you're a regular listener to this program. And we got a letter I got to read this. I want to thank everybody, first of all, who's already contributed. We do need more people to step up before the end of the month, and I'm sure that you will. But I got this letter in. Of all the people that have sent in letters, I wanted to read this one. They all mean so much, but this one is special. It comes from a listener who is writing in for the first time from Montana. From Montana, Keith, and I'm going to save this letter. He writes, "Dear Mr. Edwards, your radio program has too many listeners that enjoy your show week after week but never donate. For too long, I have been one of those people. Not any longer. I am proud to have been born and raised in the South. I am now lucky to live in an area of Montana where most people don't lock their doors and in the winter leave their trucks running while grocery shopping. Of course, the population is 99% white European. While I enjoy the colder northern European-type winters we have up here versus the hot, humid southern summers, I do miss white southern culture and camaraderie. Every week, your show connects me to my southern heritage and is an inspiration to thousands of white nationalists around the world. Thank you for your leadership and for the work of your entire team at the Political Cesspool." And he sent a very nice contribution. And, dear listener, we're going to send you a very, very nice gift package, not just including what we're offering this month as incentives, but many more items as well that I hope you'll enjoy. And I notice here on this letter that you included your phone number, and you can expect a call from me this week. I want to call and thank you personally for the wonderful sentiments there. And it's just it is an interesting thing, Keith, tying people together, tying him back to his southern heritage, how we blend it all together on this program, as we've always done for so many years now. And again, I want to make another announcement very quickly that Confederate History Month series, one series bleeding into the next, kicks off on April 1st, and we will be in South Carolina for a live remote broadcast of that that coincides with a book launch for a very, very special project that I am pleased to be a part of. We're going to have a lot more information about that next week, but there is a constellation of 12 different authors that have come together, including Michael Hill, Rebecca Dissident Mama Dillingham, Ann Wilson Smith, who is Clyde Wilson's daughter, who also is an author in her own right. She wrote the book Charlottesville Untold, Inside Unite the Right. We're featured in that book quite a bit. Neil Kumar and others. Patrick Martin is the one who has put all this together. And the book is near completion. All 12 of the entries and essays and chapters have been compiled, and they're putting it together with the artwork. I've been behind the scenes on this. It is going to launch on this program live in South Carolina at an event that you can attend. So if you can be in the upcountry of South Carolina that first week of April, that first weekend of April, April the 1st, no fooling. It's April Fool's Day, but no fooling. You can be there for this book launch, and we'll be there. And that's how we're going to kick off Confederate History Month. So a lot is happening this month. A lot's going to be happening next month. Makes you proud to be a part of it, does it not, Keith Alexander?
Yep. I tell you what, we got in on the ground floor, and I don't know whether, you know, we can take credit for the growth of the movement or not, but, you know, it sure has been, they said with the Grateful Dead, what a weird trip this has been, but, you know, it's really been good, and it's been great to see white people fighting back against all of the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that have been directed at us by the left over, you know, the past 70 years, ever since the end of World War II. Jewish power and influence had the civil rights movement, the homosexual rights movement, the feminist movement, all of these things on the drawing board before World War II. And once they got Harry Truman in as the president through the death of Franklin Roosevelt, that's when they started to move forward. And you know, they haven't run out of steam yet, but they are beginning to run out of steam, and we are beginning to find tactics and ways to counter their cultural domination. And this book, I think, is going to be something that everybody is going to need to read. It's going to, it looks like a major project. It's kind of like our generation's version of, you know, the Southern agrarians back in the 1920s that wrote, "I'll Take My Stand," you know, the literary people from Vanderbilt and whatnot back in the day. Well, this is liable to be our generation's version of that masterpiece, by the way. And if you haven't heard of it, you need to look it up and read some of those stories. It's really, it's heartening that so much is taking place and that basically we're not playing defense anymore. We're taking the battle to the enemy. And I'm looking forward to reading your contribution to it and reading the book generally.
Well, I can't wait to get it out. I sent in my submission about a month ago, and I wasn't satisfied with it. I thought it was okay, but I read it again, though, after getting some feedback on it. And I read it again, and you know what? It hits an important tenor. And they actually told me that they're going to put that in there as the first chapter of the entire book to set the tone. And it's a multifaceted book that's going to strike on a lot of different chords with regards to Southern nationalism. And anyway, I'm speaking about this. I don't have anything to present to you yet. There's nothing on the internet that sort of offers a synopsis that's being written as we speak and should be up by next week. And then this whole thing, the book's going to launch to coincide with our kickoff of Confederate History Month here on this program. There is going to be an in-person event in South Carolina that's entirely free of charge on Saturday, April 1st at noon. Saturday, April 1st at noon. Now, I do have that flyer here. Let me find it again. Let me just look for the Confederate flag in my iPhone photo gallery. Well, where is it? Ah, okay, so this is going to be, the name of the book is The Honorable Cause of Free South. The Honorable Cause of Free South. So the authors of this book are going to be on hand for autographs, interviews, and there's no cost to attend the event. Basic refreshments are going to be provided, and that's going to be Saturday, April 1st. Now, I'm going to put the email address that you can email if you want more information up on the website. I'll read it to you right now. It's Dixie on the Rocks. Dixie on the Rocks, just as you would imagine it to be spelled, at proton.me. Dixie on the Rocks at proton.me. If you want to know where this event's going to be held, if you want to know the who, what, where, when, and why, email Patrick Martin at Dixie on the Rocks at proton.me. And we'll have some stuff up on the website before next week's show. So just stay tuned for that. Just wanted to put a bee in your bonnet. You can come to that free of charge. And it looks like a lot of people are going to be coming based upon what I've heard so far. Got an email from a magazine, Keith, in Slovenia. That's one of the stops we've never made on the march around the world. Got an email from a magazine editor in a print magazine in Slovenia seeking an interview. They heard about our march around the world. They want to interview us about it. So we will sit down with them about that in the next couple of days. That is one of the few interview requests that I did agree to grant. And one more thing, Keith, talking about the South and national divorce. Ron DeSantis has reconstituted the Florida State Guard. The state legislature appears ready to fund that. And listen to what it's going to be. The Florida State Guard will be comprised of Floridians, and it will be assigned to assist and help only Floridians, DeSantis said in a news conference. It will not be subject to be mobilized by the federal government, and the federal government cannot impose policies or penalties on the Florida State Guard. Talking about national divorce, I don't know exactly what they intend to do with that, but it sounds good to me. And, you know, the classic don't tread on me insignia, the don't tread on me banner with the coiled rattlesnake ready to strike. The logo for the Florida State Guard is an alligator with its mouth wide open, and the tagline under it reads, "Let us alone." So it even looks cool, and I think this is couldn't be anything but a good development. I don't know how good, but it can't be bad.
This
it sounds
is what
good.
That's what the original Second Amendment was referring to, and it said to maintain and regulate militias and whatnot. Every state should have a militia. Mississippi already has one, by the way. I remember learning about that some years ago. And it's not under the National Guard umbrella where the federal government can take it over. That's what they tried to do at Ole Miss, for example. When they integrated Ole Miss in 1962, James Meredith, they tried to get around Posse Comitatus, the federal act that says that the federal military will not be used as a police force against American citizens. Well, what they tried to do is get the state militia or militia equivalents, the Army Reserve and things like that, and turn them into the National Guard through the National Guard so that the nation's military establishment could call upon them. But see, we don't want to do that. We want to have a military that is separate. Every state needs to have firearms training and heavy weapons training available for its citizens. And this is a great move. DeSantis is coming up with great ideas. And he's also coming out against the war in Ukraine. Another good sign.
Not quite as ardently as Trump, but why not Trump DeSantis together in 24? Why all this talk about them competing against each other? Why not just join forces, for God's sake? But anyway,
I think DeSantis not gonna be the solution, but because they're going to be trying to knock Trump out of the box with these prosecutions. So we need somebody that can step in if they
got a lifetime between now and then, when the primary start. We're out of time. I want to thank you again, Keith Alexander, for your fantastic and integral contributions to this program. Our guest tonight, what a guest list tonight. Philip DeWinter, Anka Vandermeersch, and Dan Erickson. I'm James Edwards. We'll talk to you next week when March Around the World concludes. Stay tuned.